Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's Dharma Talk is entitled Moving Beyond Anger in the Face of Injustice by Marcus Casey. Can anger ever be righteous? Is there ever a good reason to be angry? In today's Dharma Talk, we wrestle with these questions and look at what our teachers have to say about anger. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Thank you for joining today. My name is Marcus Casey. I am a volunteer meditation instructor here at Columbus KTC. We're glad you're with us here online. We're very excited to meet in person as soon as possible. And that time should be right around the corner. But we love that we now have many who tune in virtually from all over the world, honestly. So Bodhgaya is a small town in northeast India along the banks of the Falgu River. It was in this place over 2,500 years ago that Siddhartha Gautama meditated under the Bodhi tree and became enlightened. He became known as the Awakened One, the Buddha, and spent more than 50 years traveling and teaching around what is now India and Nepal. Bodhgaya is a sprawling pilgrimage town. It has many ancient, medieval, and modern shrines, monasteries, temples, and hotels. And at the heart of Bodhgaya is the Mahabodhi temple complex, which is busy with shrines, monuments, and sculpted images established over the last 2,000 years. About 8 years ago, on July 7th, 2013, 10 bombs exploded in and around the temple complex. 5 people, including 2 Buddhist monks, were injured. More bombs were found and defused. 3 of the bombs exploded at Tergar Monastery, which is headed by Minja Rinpoche, on grounds given to him by Taisichu Rinpoche. These are teachers in the same lineage as Columbus KTC. One bomb was placed behind a door in a classroom where children study Buddhism, although no one was injured. Following that attack, His Holiness the 17th Karmapa, the head of our lineage, said, "I am convinced that as Buddhists, in responding to this situation, the best homage we can pay to Lord Buddha is to uphold his teachings on love and ahimsa, or nonviolence." Delegates from many Buddhist traditions released a joint statement that said, "We are deeply saddened, but we forgive those responsible for bombing the Mahabodhi temple in Bodhgaya. You may damage the most important temple in Buddhism, but you will not destroy our faith in forgiveness and compassion. Those who were around when our center burned remembered that just a few days afterward, we held a very moving interfaith service in the parking lot. We joined in prayers for the arsonist that he would find happiness and freedom from suffering. Today, we are going to talk about our response to injustice." It's our tradition, before we get too far in, it's our tradition to say together the 4-line refuge prayer when we start our talks. The prayer's in Tibetan, so if you don't know it, listen and just make the aspiration to awaken and help others to awaken. When we chant this, we are repeating our commitment to taking refuge in the 3 jewels: the Buddha, or the goal, what we aspire to; the Dharma, or the path; and the Sangha, our guides and companions on the path. We will chant the refuge prayer once in Tibetan, once in English, and then a second time in Tibetan. Om Sangje Chidang Soki Chognam La Jiang Chu Bardu Dai Ni Gap Su Chi Dagi jinsa ki pe sunangi drola pinchir sangje chuparsho. Until I am enlightened, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Through the merit I create by practicing generosity and the other perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Sangje chidang sogi chong nam la jang chu bardu da ni gyab su chi da gi jin so ki pe su nam gi dro la pin chir sangje dru par sho. Thank you. At KTC, we teach compassion. We teach practices that allow us to grow in compassion and empathy for others. We are a community who cares deeply about righting injustice and ministering to the oppressed. Seeing oppression often gives rise to powerful emotions, some emotions that are directed toward the oppressed, and some that are directed toward the oppressor. Often we feel anger about the situation as a whole. It is such a powerful emotion that when our teachers give talks about anger, students often ask if there is a place for righteous anger. So today we're going to look at righteous anger from several angles. We'll talk about what our teachers say about it, as well as looking at it from the perspective of different Dharma teachings. First, a confession. I'm going to be open and offer this confession to you today. I'm tackling a topic because it is what I need to hear. In the opening of The Way of the Bodhisattva, Shantideva says, "Here I shall say nothing that has not been said before, and in the art of prosody I have no skill. I therefore have no thought that this might be of benefit to others. I wrote it only to habituate my mind." I'm exploring the teachers of our teachers on this subject in order to habituate my mind. And whereas Shantideva may have been modeling humility when he actually had great wisdom, I am no Shantideva. This is not false humility in my case. We have all faced what we consider injustice recently, whether directed at ourselves or at others. Everyone I know has perceived injustice in the recent past. In our current political climate, people see different injustices and disagree on them. Columbus KTC does not have an official political stance. We welcome anyone. I won't mention which injustices have touched me and ignited my anger, but they are definitely there. I'll talk about a non-political injustice that I've seen lately, school bullying. When I see bullying, it is a trigger for me. Nothing takes me from calm and tranquil to seeing red faster than bullying. I wasn't really bullied much as a kid, so I'm not sure exactly where my reaction comes from. It may be a karmic imprint that I bring with me from before. I'm not really sure. But two of my kids have started new schools this fall. Both have experienced bullying directed at them and their friends. And this is an unfamiliar experience for them. They are seeing prejudice and bigotry. They've been called slurs by people who don't even know them. I struggle to work out what advice to give to my children. As a parent, my own hackles rise when my children are bullied. So I'm trying to give them advice and wisdom while inwardly I'm seething. This is an example where I have anger. To me, there is a clear injustice. There is an oppressor and an oppressed. And I have a strong, strong emotional reaction in solidarity with the oppressed. Your issue may be something else. It may be political. It may be related to the pandemic. It may be related to a close personal relationship. Whatever it is, the feelings and the emotions probably look similar. So first, let's talk about what our teachers say on the subject. I have seen Buddhist teachers who say that anger is a mistranslation, and that the proper translation where we see the word anger in our English language Dharma books should be hatred. And some teachers believe that righteous anger has a place, at least some Western teachers that I've seen. Other teachers don't make this distinction and use the word anger. The teachers of our lineage, as far as I've seen, do not make this distinction. Kenpo Karcha Rinpoche, the founder of our center, was asked frequently about righteous anger. He said that righteous anger doesn't exist, that all anger is harmful. Those are tough words for me to hear. His Holiness Karmapa has written a good bit about anger in his book, The Heart is Noble, Changing the World from the Inside Out. As a matter of fact, Shambhala published a free ebook after the bombing in Bodh Gaya. It's called Beyond Anger, How to Hold On to Your Heart and Your Humanity in the Midst of Injustice. They excerpted His Holiness's writings on anger for one of the chapters. His Holiness Karmapa puts great emphasis on developing an understanding of interdependence. He has written an entire book on interdependence. We live in an interdependent world. Interdependence can be visualized as a web connecting all of us. When we act, we are pulling on one of the strings of the web, which affect those connected to us. And then when other people act, it pulls on the strings of the web that are attached to us. It affects us. In case you haven't noticed, many people act primarily out of their own self-interest. And when acting out of self-interest meets interdependence, the result is conflict. His Holiness Karmapa says that the same principle of interdependence that brings us into conflict with others when we act selfishly can also bring us into harmony when we take others' well-being into consideration. He says there are many kinds of conflict, but the worst ones are those fueled by anger. Conflict per se, he says, is not necessarily harmful, but when anger is present, harm of some sort is done. Let's get back to my example of school bullies. These kids act out of what they have been taught. Teenage prejudice is born of ignorance. If my response to that ignorance is anger, I increase the intensity of the conflict. At the very least, it will disturb me, the angry person, because anger is toxic. It is poison. When anger arises in my mind, it steals my happiness. Even worse, it counters the effort I have put into increasing my compassion. Anger that persists turns into bitterness and sometimes violence. Disturbing emotions like anger are a greater enemy than any person ever will be. So let's look at the basics of the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha summed up his teachings in four lines. Abandon what is harmful, practice what is helpful, tame your mind. These are the teachings of the Buddha. Now that fourth line, these are the teachings of the Buddha, means that the teachings of the Buddha are not other than those first three lines. So let's talk about those three. Abandon what is harmful. Is anger harmful? As we mentioned just a second ago, at the very least, anger harms the angry person. It is also very difficult to avoid harm to others when you are angry. You lose your mindfulness and act out of your anger. Anger also spreads. Your anger can help ignite anger in others. Then they swallow that poison as well and could spread suffering to others. The second of the four lines that sum up the Buddha's teaching is, practice what is helpful. Is anger helpful? Is it helpful? Let's talk about that. Proponents of righteous anger point to the anger that fuels social change. But I propose that anger is not as effective at reaching true justice, because when we hold anger, we can only hold compassion for one side. But with compassion instead of anger as our motivation, we can work for justice and to ease the suffering of the oppressed while practicing compassion for their oppressors. Compassion expands our hearts, whereas anger contracts our hearts. With compassion, our heart can grow to where it can hold all beings, regardless of their actions. Lama Kathy says, it may be normal to get angry, but is it necessary? People say the redeeming quality of anger is that it fuels action against injustice. But doesn't compassion already do that? Is it possible that we can choose our fuel? If we can choose between compassion and anger, isn't compassion the better choice? Especially if our actions would be the same. Compassion, in the Buddhist sense, is compassion for all beings. Therefore, Buddhists practice compassion for both the oppressor and the oppressed. Righteous anger makes others into the enemy. It labels them as the unrighteous, while we are the righteous. It creates a dichotomy of us versus them. As we train as bodhisattvas, we recognize our connection with all other beings. All beings seek happiness and the relief from suffering, just like we do. Creating a group of others, the unrighteous, makes it harder to see the similarities in our motivation. Righteous anger as a fuel is very volatile. Think about it. It's kind of a funny thing to even consider, but if compassion spills over, we create a more beautiful, loving world. But if anger gets out of our control, it can ignite disharmony, hatred, and even violence. So the third line, tame your mind. A mind that is prone to anger needs to be tamed. A mind that is prone to anger is reactive. Isn't reactivity antithetical to mindfulness? A tamed mind is a peaceful mind. We can maintain awareness of the thoughts and emotion of the mind without being subject to their turbulence. Karmapa says that anger rises out of a disgruntled, unhappy state of mind. Once anger is present, it feeds on unhappiness and mental agitation. We can see from direct experience that upsetting and disturbing others just causes their anger to increase. When we upset others, we create a condition for their anger to rise or escalate. This is a terrible way to treat another person. Anger inflicts serious harm on all those around the angry person. A whole family, community, and even society at large can be affected by anger within it. People often respond to other people's anger with fear, or they may become angry themselves. So as you become angry with them, you are setting the conditions for their fear or their anger. Karmapa says that increasing levels of hostility within a community bring increasing stress, conflict, and even violence. Does that sound like what's going on right now? For this reason, it is crucial that we ourselves are free of aggression and anger, when we try to end conflicts we are part of, as well as when we try to intervene in other problems. If we bring our own anger to the conflict, we will end up fueling it further. And that's key, isn't it? We like to argue that our anger is justified, that, you know, we would never take something to a point of violence. But if we become part of the fuel, if our anger is added to the fire, that may contribute to the blaze getting out of control. And then it's out of our hands. Our entire community, country, and at times even our world can get caught up in the flames of anger. That can lead to violence, it can lead to war, and we will have contributed to that rise of anger. Some conflicts get so out of control that they have lasted for thousands of years. A cycle with righteous anger on both sides. Anger harms us by clouding our judgment. We can't think or act effectively if we are overcome with anger. We lose our ability to see the positive side of somebody, and that's the side we urgently need to connect with in order to resolve the situation. Now, I'm not saying that when we look at a situation, that in all situations, both sides are, you know, equally at fault or something like that. I firmly believe that that's not the case in many situations. But I also believe that we are called to connect with compassion for both sides. We are called to recognize the suffering of both sides. And if we cannot do that, if we can only connect with the suffering of one side, then we push the other side out of our sphere of compassion. Anger causes suffering. It is toxic. When we harbor resentment and anger, we are willingly ingesting poison. Just think about times when you've been really angry. What is your mental health like when your mind is full of anger? It doesn't just stay as anger, does it? It eventually evolves into depression, despair, anxiety, fear, you name it. And these things always follow an angry mind. And if we nurture our anger, we provide fertile ground for unhappiness. Again, I don't want it to seem like I'm advocating ignoring societal or political issues. That couldn't be further from the truth. We can engage with them and talk about them, but we have to watch our minds. We must train our minds through meditation such that we can act out of universal compassion, a compassion that does not distinguish between friends, enemies, and strangers. Sometimes when I look around at what's going on, I wonder if there are exceptions to the admonition to refrain from anger in extreme circumstances. So let's think about an extreme circumstance. What if we feel like our country is very much at risk? But I have to remember that our teachers who are giving these instructions to us, Kimpo Garja Rinpoche, for one, saw his country taken over by the Chinese. He made a very dangerous escape to India. He spent years in a disease-ridden refugee camp. Those are extreme circumstances. He has more extreme experience with political injustice than most. Trungpa Rinpoche, one of His Holiness the 17th Karmapa's teachers, talks about that time period in which he faced a danger of losing his life or being thrown into prison and having to leave his homeland and flee Tibet. He describes how sometimes there was no food, no clothing, no place to stay. And he talked about the Dharma teachings in this case, especially a very special teaching he received from Kimpo Gangchar. Trungpa Rinpoche says that what happens internally when we experience difficulty and sufferings, the danger is that anger, jealousy, or another negative emotion will arrive in our minds, will arise in our minds. The reason these teachings were so helpful to him at that time is because they are an antidote for anger and afflictions. Trungpa Rinpoche said that if at that point he had gotten angry, he might have joined the war and fought against the Chinese. Rinpoche had monasteries. He was already seen as a leader in Tibet. And many people told him he should become a general and lead an army in the war. He says that had he done so, there would have been the possibility of killing many people or committing other misdeeds. Later, he would have looked back on it with regret. He said that if he had gone that route, there could have been no happiness in my life. But because of these instructions, I felt no anger, and so I did no wrongdoing. I did not kill anyone, prepare to kill anyone, or even form the intention to kill because of these Dharma teachings. He could avoid losing control and letting the afflictions overwhelm his mind. When he looks back on those times, he thinks about how he faced both the danger of his supposed enemies and the danger of accumulating bad karma. There was a very real danger he could have gone down the wrong path. Trungpa Rinpoche says that when anger arises in us, there is a danger that we might be mistaken in the moment. We might fight, or we might say something harsh or unpleasant that we will regret in the future. It is important that we take control of our minds. If we reduce the intensity of our afflictions, in the future, looking back, we will see how things worked out. Do you hear how the word danger? Someone who's actually fled over mountains to escape an invading army uses the word danger when referring to the possibility of our minds falling into anger. His Holiness the Dalai Lama tells the story of meeting a monk who had been in a Chinese prison for several decades. The monk said that at a few points during his imprisonment, he had been in great danger. Of course, the Dalai Lama was not surprised that he would have been in great danger, being in prison as he was, but the monk explained that the danger he was talking about was the danger of becoming angry at his captors. Trungpa Rinpoche tells the story of a Tibetan monk who heard that war had broken out. He hid himself in a house and, looking through a window, holding a rifle, he saw he had a good shot at a Chinese soldier. And he had the thought, should I kill that soldier? He aimed and he could have shot him at any time, but he thought, no, how can I kill a person? He put the gun away and later said that it was very good fortune he didn't shoot and kill anyone. It was the kindness of the three jewels that stopped him. In the same way, we will not regret keeping control over our minds. So we've talked about three specific triggers for anger: personal bullying, the bombings at Bodh Gaya, and the invasion of Tibet. Society teaches us that anger is justified in these circumstances. But let's examine what goes on in our minds when we are angry about bullying, terrorism, or political upheaval, or anything else. The Buddha taught that the cause of all suffering is ego clinging. So we know that if we examine our minds when we become angry at these situations, if there is even a small amount of ego clinging in our response, then suffering will result. Anger reinforces ego fixation and makes it harder to see our reactivity. Why am I specifically angry at the bullies? Specifically thinking about the bullies of my children, is it because my kids are mine and therefore I have a much stronger emotional response to negative things that happen to them? That last sentence contains the words my, mine, I. If I'm acting out of ego clinging, my only focus towards the other kids is retribution. But how tragic is that? The bullies in this situation are young enough that it's likely most of their prejudices have been passed down to them by the adults in their families and communities. And those impressions are difficult to break free from, and it doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen at a very young age. In the meantime, they're creating barriers between themselves and some great people, my kids included. They've inherited a poisonous legacy that harms them as well. My response to the bullying is rooted in ego clinging. My compassion toward the suffering of my kids is absolutely pure, but the anger that I add to that is ego-based. And when I try to remove that, then I can focus as well on the suffering of the other kids in the scenario. What grabbed my attention about the bombings in Bodh Gaya? There have been many bombings in the 8 years since then, all over the world. But I have an attachment to Bodh Gaya. I am a Buddhist. That's part of my identity. I. There's an injustice in these bombings, but there's a special anger when they hit close to my identity. My reactivity contains ego clinging. Trungpa Rinpoche was tempted to take up arms to protect Tibet. This is very hard to hear, but countries, like anything else, are impermanent. But this was his own country. Acting out of anger would have been acting out of ego fixation. Before we can start with antidotes to this kind of anger, we have to be convinced of the fact that we have to get rid of this anger. It is easy to become attached to righteous anger. It actually feels good in the moment. It's easy to treat it as something we value, even. And so we can talk about antidotes in another talk, but you have to recognize the need for the antidotes to this kind of anger. And that's what this talk is about. So I mentioned it can feel good in the moment. When I read a news story in which it feels like the oppressors are winning, or when bullying goes unchecked, or when countries are taken over against the will of their people, or what have you. One of the feelings I feel is a sense of powerlessness. I read about it, I hear the stories, I feel powerless. And when I react in anger, there's a rush of energy from that so-called righteous anger. And that rush of energy makes me feel like I can get some of that power back. I can envision myself as strong in my resistance to the enemy through my anger. But our purpose as bodhisattvas in training is to love even our enemies. It's a radical message in the Buddhist teachings, in Jesus' teachings. It's contrary to our tendency toward ego clinging, but it is the only way to break out of the suffering of cyclic existence and help lead others out of suffering as well. When we run across something that makes us feel powerless, and our initial reaction is to rise up and take back that power, recognize that the dynamic there is that something is threatening our ego. And many times our initial reactivity of rising up is in defense of our egos. And that's just going to reinforce our ego fixation. And so I think there's definitely a good amount of room for pause when we see that, recognizing that it's happening, using the work you've done in meditation in shamatha to just get that little bit of separation from those immediate emotions, and try to take that and look at what action needs to be taken that is effective, at how you can practice compassion and help the people who need to be helped, how you can practice compassion and say prayers and develop love for the people who are hurting others because it's happening out of their own suffering and it's creating suffering for them in the future. And really take that mindfulness and tease apart what's effective, what's compassionate, from what is acting out of ego clinging. Of course, I think my kids should be protected from bullies, and that those who are oppressed here in America or around the world should be freed from oppression. But I don't have to come to that from a place of reactionary anger. The true skillful means is to come at it from a place of compassion. I love that term, skillful means. I didn't understand it when I first started studying the Dharma teachings, and they would use the term skillful means. But in a talk like this, it just makes so much sense. It is skillful. It requires skill to act out of a place of compassion. Our desire to address injustice can come from a place of compassion, but anger can only come from ego clinging. I started this talk by talking about the bombing of Bodh Gaya in 2013. And some reports are that a possible motive in the bombings was to avenge the atrocities committed by a Buddhist group in Myanmar against the Rohingya Muslims. Like many, if not all, forms of terrorism, the terrorists themselves believed that they were acting out of righteous anger. The atrocities against the Rohingya Muslims were horrible. They were atrocities. And yes, they were denounced by the rest of the Buddhist community all around the world. But these terrorists allowed their righteous anger to develop in such a way and for so long that they believed that what they were doing was righteous. And you start thinking of all kinds of terrorism. And you see that that's common throughout. People are defending the causes, believe they're defending the causes that are close to them and their own egos. They believe it's an act of resistance. They have felt the powerlessness when their ego is attacked and things close to them and their identity are attacked. They have nurtured that anger and that fear, and it's grown all the way to the place of violence. Nurturing anger, no matter how righteous it may seem, can create all kinds of suffering and lead to disastrous results. That's how dangerous anger can be, even if we feel justified. So let's take hold of some of the advice from our teachers to work with our anger. Anger hardens our hearts, and it's antithetical to the work we are doing to increase our compassion. So work on developing your bodhicitta daily. Practice compassion for everyone, regardless of their actions or beliefs. Do not abandon a desire for justice, but understand that anger is a long-term hindrance in the quest for justice. These are thoughts I've wrestled with for a long time. Our teachers have been very clear on the issue, and this is my attempt at preaching to myself how incompatible my anger, even what I would call righteous anger, is with the Dharma. I am trying to talk myself down. It's not an easy teaching, but I believe in the power of love and compassion, even in an increasingly hostile world. It's challenging, I know, but I hope this is helpful to you. I think about the way Buddhists do confession and what we do to counterbalance bad karma after it has been committed. And I think that the first step in that is always regret. You have to regret that action. If you hang on to a fondness for your action while you're going through the motions of confession, you're just going to return to it. And I don't know that it would neutralize the karma, the negative result of that action at all. So this has been a long talk to try to convince myself that I should regret my righteous anger, that it makes the situation worse, that it hurts my compassion, and that I am better off working skillfully out of a place of compassion rather than reacting in anger. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that." And with that, I will turn it over for any questions. It looks like we do have some comments here. All right. So I see the comment here that despite their practice, people still feel angry. And that even though they know the logical reasons for not being angry, they're still angry. And they're really struggling with what to do. And I absolutely think that we should go deeper into this. And hopefully in a future talk, we can talk about how to resolve that anger. And again, I'll talk today I think taking the first step is to regret the anger and to recognize it as a negative in your life, because that's not always obvious when it comes to this kind of anger that is coming about at viewing injustice. It's not an obvious thing that it's a negative. And so the first thing is that we have to recognize that. Time spent on the cushion is never wasted. Time in shamatha, time practicing whatever practices your teachers have given you. Tonglen. Tonglen is an excellent thing to practice. I know Lama Kathy has talked about Tonglen and the practice, for those who are unfamiliar, the practice of Tonglen is to take in the suffering of others and transform it, and then breathe out your happiness to them. And Lama Kathy has talked about that sometimes we have a block. Sometimes there are people for whom we just cannot generate that much feeling, that we really have trouble with them. They've hurt us in ways that we can't deal with right now. And Lama Kathy has said that she received the teaching to do this. Work where you are. And she said that, I think it was Kempo Karcho Rinpoche advised her to, in your meditation practice every day, visualize yourself just showing up with a gift for that person. Just give them a gift every day. Just practice a generosity toward them in your mind on a daily basis. And it may take a long time, but hopefully that can start to break down the negativity you have. Yes, thank you. We have in the chat now a link to the Tonglen practice. And then this modified practice, if you're having trouble with that, then give that gift to the person that you're dealing with. Shanti Deva, in his chapter on patience, has a really fascinating logical analysis of situations in which our quote-unquote enemies hurt us. And he says that we've created, through our own past actions, our own past negative actions have created the conditions for that. Without our own past negative actions, we wouldn't even still be here in samsara. We wouldn't have a body. We wouldn't have that negative connection to this person. And so who is the real enemy here? The real enemy is always our own wrongdoing. Our own wrongdoing sets the conditions for future, it sets the causes for future, for what happens in the future. And we have to recognize that. I have to recognize that and recognize that anger is just not doing me any good and could be doing a lot of long-term harm. So I don't have an easy answer for that. Someone in the talk said, would you recommend doing self-tonglen? And yes, absolutely. One very effective method of doing tonglen is, when you begin tonglen, to picture yourself across from you. Picture yourself looking at yourself. Look at yourself and pull all of your own suffering and then give happiness. And practice that for a little while And then you move outward in your sphere. You move to those loved ones with whom you have a very good connection, those you would consider friends. And then you keep moving outward. You move to those people you don't really know, your casual acquaintances, and then to perfect strangers. And then you move on to those people that you have a very difficult time with, no matter who they are. A couple other thoughts that come to mind is that Tibetans often say that the lifetime before a hell realm is often someone who has a lot of political power. And in our karmic cycle, someone with a lot of power, with a lot of political power, has the ability to do negativity and harm on a much, much greater scale than those of us who lack that kind of power. So as you look at politicians, for example, whom you think have created a great deal of harm, understand that A, they're acting out of ego clinging, they're acting out of self-interest, they're doing exactly what we do, which is to seek our own happiness and try to get rid of those things that make us suffer. So we absolutely have a lot in common with them, even if it expresses itself in different ways. But also understand that their future is horrible, because when you create this kind of negativity in your mind, it follows you. It's not a bright future. So thank you all. I hope this has been helpful. There's a quote that I ran across recently that said, it's by Vanessa, I don't even know how to pronounce her middle name, Vanessa Zuse Goddard. And it says, forget about things done or left to do. Forget about deadlines and milestones, profits and quotas. Those will be taken care of. They always are. So don't worry. Whenever a being appears in front of you, just love them. That is your focus. That is where the real work lies. And I kind of got to thinking about that. What if we could also say, forget about who is right and who is wrong. When a being appears in front of you, just love them. That is your focus. That is where the real work lies. So let's take a minute here to dedicate the merit of our talk. There's great virtue in learning to follow the Bodhisattva path, and specifically when we do that for the benefit of beings. So let us not hold this virtue to ourselves. May the virtue we have generated today enrich all beings, that they may come to happiness and freedom from suffering. Thank you very much. Go well. I hope you have a great week. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.